Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270. Our website, tomhartman.com. There should be a link there from airamerica.com as well. It's Friday. It's going to be our Everything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls, trying to keep them short throughout the 3 hours of our program. And, of course, starting our first hour with Senator Bernie Sanders, as we've done for well over 3 years now. Every Friday, Senator Sanders, the only one of two independents in the Senate. He was the only independent in the House of Representatives for a long time, the founder of the House Progressive Caucus and the Progressive Caucus in Washington, D.C., and the senator from the great state of Vermont, but also I think of Bernie as America's senator. I think he does one of the finest jobs in Washington, D.C. of representing our values. And he will be taking your calls at 866-303-2270 right after our first break. Senator Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Bernie. What are the big events of this week? I would guess probably the Iraq.
But the Iraq here is a big event. Global warming is a huge event. I think veterans issues are very much in the spotlight because of the number of soldiers who are coming home wounded and the record-breaking, if you like, number who are going to come home with post-traumatic stress disorder and the need for us to make sure that we have the facilities to deal with those men and women. Those are some of the issues. The other issue, Tom, that is going to be surfacing within the next 2 weeks, two other issues that are out there. You're going to see prescription drugs come up big time. There is a bill called Prescription Drug User Fee Act. We'll try to get in that bill an amendment for prescription drug reimportation, which will mean that individuals, pharmacists, prescription drug distributors will be able to buy safe, FDA-approved medicine from Canada and other countries. We can lower the cost of prescription drugs very, very substantially. If we move in that direction, I think we have a majority vote in the Senate. We'll see what kind of opposition the Republicans put up, and certainly the President will be siding with the drug companies as he usually does. The other issue, Tom, that you're going to see a lot about in the coming couple of weeks is trade. Fast-track reauthorization comes to an end at the end of June. I think, frankly, we have the votes. I hope we have the votes. I think we have the votes in the Senate, over 40 votes, to ultimately kill fast-track. And what the importance of that is it will allow the Congress to begin to be involved in the discussion and the incorporation of trade agreements, which will work for American workers and not just for the CEOs of large corporations. So that's another issue you'll be probably hearing a lot about.
Bernie, you mentioned prescription drugs. My understanding is that the ability of Medicare, the federal government, to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for lower prices for prescription drugs was passed in the House and is stalled in the Senate because essentially the Republicans are filibustering it. There's
right.
Not 60 votes for cloture.
Well, the truth is, Tom, what was passed in the House was not as strong as it should have been. And I don't think the pharmaceutical industry is all that opposed to it, but it was something. But you're absolutely right. Here's the story. I just talked yesterday to a fellow who is coming up for approval in the Senate to be a very high-ranking man, an undersecretary for the Veterans Administration. We chatted. The VA for years, and actually in cooperation with some parts of the Department of Defense, have negotiated drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry, and they get a good deal. They save taxpayers money. And the idea that Medicare, which represents more than 40 million Americans, cannot negotiate good drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry is beyond comprehension. That was the language that was explicitly put in there to prevent negotiation by the Republicans when they controlled the
Congress. I thought it was a poison pill.
It is just unbelievable. No, well, it wasn't a poison pill for the Republicans. They had the majority and they liked
it. No, but I mean, I think that they put it in there so that 2, 3, 4 years down the road, they could say, holy cow, look at how much Medicare is costing. We're just going to have to kill this program off.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I think more likely the fellow who helped write the bill is now working for Farmer. I think that's probably the more likely explanation. He left. Billy Towson, who was then chairman of the Commerce Committee, left the Congress. He was ill, came back a while later, and lo and behold, he's now the head of Farmer. What people should know is that in a nation's capital, which is dominated by a whole lot of wealthy, powerful, and greedy institutions, whether it is lobbies, whether it's the oil industry, whether it's just multinational corporations who fight for disastrous trade agreements, whether it's the banking people who make sure that Americans continue to pay over 20% interest rates on credit cards, et cetera, et cetera. At the very top of the list, as the greediest, most unscrupulous organization, is Pharma, which represents the pharmaceutical industry. These guys never lose. They have some, if you can believe it, in a Congress with 435 House members, 100 senators, they have 1,000 lobbyists, well-paid lobbyists from the best law firms in the area, former leaders of the Republican and Democratic Party. They are enormously powerful, and the result is that we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. The result is that you have a prescription drug Medicare Part D for seniors, which prevents negotiation and costs us much more than we should be paying for medicine.
Bernie, a strategic question. After the Vietnam War, the Republican Party relentlessly hammered Democrats for, quote, losing Vietnam, end quote.
Yep.
In fact, that meme is still, I've had Republicans come on this program and throw that at me,
yep,
probably, you know, at least once a month. It seems to me that we're preparing for a repeat of this, that,
yep,
that already you've got, you know, Bill Kristol this morning on C-SPAN essentially saying the war, if the war is lost, it's the Democrats' fault.
Yep.
They have blood on their hands, bloody, bloody, blah. And all the failures of this administration are going to be blamed on the Democratic Party. You're not a member of the Democratic Party. As an interested outsider and a political insider, you know, you understand the system. How can the Democratic Party head this off, or is this... So, you know, I mean, what's the best way strategically to deal with this?
Well, Tom, I think your analysis, your characterization of what's going on is correct, but it's even worse than that. If, God forbid, there is another attack against this country, and there certainly could be. We know that Al-Qaeda is trying as hard as they can to wage these horrendous attacks any place in the world that they can, and then they could strike again in the United States. What the goal is to lay the groundwork, to blame the Democratic Party for that. And I think all of this speaks to the desperation of a party, the Republican Party, which has nothing to say of relevance on the important issues facing our country, including, of course, how you can stabilize Iraq, how we can bring our troops home as soon as possible, how we can effectively fight international terrorism, which is a serious issue. They've got nothing to say. They have failed dismally on all of those areas, getting us into a war, of course, that we should never have gotten into, making a difficult situation far, far worse. So if you don't have anything to say, then what you do is you challenge and you attack the patriotism of people who disagree with you. Nothing new. This is what they always have done. But I have been rather appalled by the level of attacks, the baseness of the attacks that we have seen in recent days. The simple fact of the matter is this is a war that we were misled into. It is a war that we were totally unprepared for. I'm sure you have read the quotes on your program of how our troops would be seen as liberators. Flowers,
sure,
would be thrown at them. They'd be home,
sure,
in a few months. The Bush administration failed to provide the equipment, the armor that our troops needed while they were there. You have people like Dick Cheney, as recently as 3 weeks ago, still bringing forth the most outrageous lies, still believing, despite all of the intelligence reports to the contrary, that Saddam Hussein was allied with Al-Qaeda, totally untrue, still saying it today.
Mm-hmm. When in fact they were mortal enemies.
Of course they were. Philosophically and politically, Very different.
Well, even militarily, I mean, the reason that Osama bin Laden got expelled from Saudi Arabia was because he tried to organize an army to go attack Iraq, to go attack Saddam Hussein, because he was a secularist. And,
exactly.
And his own Saudi fellows were so horrified by this that the House of Saud expelled him from the country.
Right. But they both have funny-sounding last names, so they must be working together, right?
Right.
We don't have to go beyond that. Anyhow, these guys on global warming, the president barely acknowledges the problem or the role that man-made activity has in causing what is a potential disaster. So given the fact that these guys have nothing constructive to say, all they can do is wage character assassination against their opponents. But the good news, I think the American people are catching on to their plate of tricks, and I think they are very much on the defensive now, as they should be.
Yeah. Amen. 16 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Bernie will be taking your calls right after this break at 866-303-2270.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your phone calls at 866-303-2270. By the way, you want to drop by our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com. Click live chat. It's right up at the top of the page. Mark in Thailand. I'm assuming you're listening to our web stream. I don't think we have an affiliate station there, Mark.
No, you do not have an affiliate station here, although there is a very progressive station up here as well, with the call letters TITS, of all things. But Senator Sanders, it is an extreme honor to speak with you today. One of the issues that has crossed my mind, a very serious issue, is Senator Joe Lieberman. He has consistently threatened to cross party lines from independent, ho-ho, independent, to Republican. And I understand that would put the Senate back in a 50-50 position with dark dude himself, Dick Cheney, having the deciding vote. Would you or any of the other independents within the Senate currently consider changing your party affiliation to keep the Democrats in control of the Senate?
Well, the numbers that you refer to count me as within the Democratic caucus. So
correct.
There are 49 Democrats plus Lieberman and myself. If Lieberman were to go to the Republicans, it would be 50-50 with Cheney casting the vote for the Republicans. But by the way, my own guess is that's not going to happen. But the reality is, of course, I would do my best to support the Democrats.
So you're by caucusing with the Democrats, in other words, Bernie, you don't have to join the Democratic Party
in order
to give the Democrats the
Yeah, all that means is who would vote for the leader, Harry Reid, and I certainly have and will.
Right. Mark, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Thailand. Mitch in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, gentlemen. Another fine gray day up here in the Northwest.
Indeed.
I have a quick comment and then like a double-sided question here. First of all, on whether or not President Bush vetoes the supplemental appropriations bill.
Yep.
If he vetoes it, move on. You guys have got a bunch of other business to take care of. He's finished it. And my question is like two-sided. When are we going to get rid of all these mercenary armies that are running all over, not just Iraq, but even in the United States now, like Blackwater? And when are we going to eliminate privatization within our military, make every job uniform so that everybody is responsible to the UCMJ?
Okay. Bush will unless I'm very, very mistaken, vetoed the supplemental. The Democratic leadership is now figuring out what to bring back to him. I hope that they will bring back to him the strongest possible legislation, which brings our troops home as soon as we possibly can. You know, Bush, Tom, made one of the more incredible, as a president who has made many incredible statements, many outrageous statements, he recently made one which is going to go right to the top of his list. When somebody asked him, they said, Mr. President, the election and public sentiment in America indicates that the people want a change of policy in Iraq. And you know what his response was? Yeah, I am giving them a change of policy. We're bringing more troops in.
Right, therefore an escalation.
That's the change of policy, the escalation of the war, beyond belief.
Yeah.
But we have got to keep the pressure on, and I think the tipping point will come. And it's hard to say how close we are, but we may be closer than people think. When a number of Republicans go back to their districts, especially those guys who are up for re-election, and they talk to their constituents, and their constituents say, you're voting the wrong way, we want the troops to come home. And when a half a dozen, eight of these guys go walking into the White House, then the war is over. In terms of the issue of privatization of the military, very serious issue. We are spending a huge amount of money hiring private groups, contractors, to do work that our military used to do. I think it's costing us far more than we used to pay for the same services. I think it demoralizes a lot of our soldiers who are there and see right around them people making a hell of a lot more money than they do. It drains away some of our best people who then quit the military, go work for the private contractors. Bad idea, but that is consistent with everything the Bush-Cheney are trying to do into privatizing almost anything that is public. They want to privatize Social Security, they want to privatize Medicare, they want to privatize all kinds of federal agencies and put them into the hands of private contractors who will pay workers less. And I think in the long run, because of absenteeism, loss of enthusiasm about one's career, will cost taxpayers more.
Well, but those private contractors then have huge profits, so they can give big contributions to the Republican Party, which seems to be a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America.
Right. I mean, and obviously, and that's exactly right.
Yeah, there is a certain political calculus here. It's Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour today, taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Throughout this first hour of our program, then it's going to be our Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your short calls throughout the entire program today. It should be an interesting time. Any topic you want to talk about. But so for this hour here, any questions you have for Senator Sanders. 27 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program on Air America.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, the independent from Vermont, taking your questions. Harry in Boulder, Colorado, you're live with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen, from the beautiful People's Republic of Boulder, Colorado.
Great.
How are you?
Good morning.
I'm doing well, thank you, and I hope you both are. I don't know how long my cell phone battery is going to last, so I'd like to make a real quick question. And, Tom, you certainly are more up on this particular issue than I am, but I first heard about it from listening to your program a few weeks ago. Senator Sanders, apparently a large portion of the reason we started this illicit war in Iraq was due to some manufactured documents that were given to the American government by Prime Minister Berlusconi of Italy. And since these documents were found to be fraudulent on their face by the CIA and had to be shuffled through British intelligence so the president could use them as a way to wage this war. I'm wondering, sir, is the Senate or the House looking at the possibility that lying to the Congress and the American people to start a war? Seems to me that would really border on treason.
Well, I can tell you this, Harry. One of the important changes, obviously, that's taken place in the last 4 months is that right now, virtually every single day, you are seeing very important investigations taking place. You're seeing some excellent investigations taking place in the House. John Conyers, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Henry Waxman, chairman of Government Reform. You're seeing it in the Senate. Pat Leahy, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Carl Levin, chairman of Armed Forces. So for the first time since George Bush has been president, really hard questions are being asked. My understanding is that in one of the committees, I think it's Waxman's committee, they are prepared to subpoena Condoleezza Rice to start asking her some questions. Karl Rove may be subpoenaed. So I think, Harry, what I can say is not only on this issue, which deals with the so-called purchase of depleted uranium from Niger, but on many, many other issues, questions are going to be asked that have never been asked before.
Jack in San Diego, California. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes. What options would Congress have should President Bush sign the supplemental and issue a signing statement to the effect that any timetables for withdrawal would not be binding on the commander-in-chief?
Jack, I think that he will not do that. I think the signing statements are an outrage, as Bush has done many, many times. But on such a high-profile issue like that, I frankly don't think that he will do that.
It does raise the larger question. Perhaps it was a little more rhetorical, but it raises the larger question of the legality of the signing statements.
Right.
Is that going to be addressed by the Senate or the House?
I hope and expect that it will, because I think, to me, it is clearly unconstitutional. I mean, Congress often goes through very difficult negotiations to come up with legislation, and then they give it to the president. The president says, sure, I'm going to sign this bill, but by the way, I don't like provision number 63, article number 16, this language or that language. That is not within the constitutional purview of the president of the United States. He doesn't like it. He can veto it, tell us why. He can sign it, and the bill gets enforced as written. So I have very strong issues with the constitutionality of what he has been doing.
David in Indiana, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I just heard on the other day on C-SPAN that the Republicans want to try to cut Social Security benefits. They've been saying since 1991 that the benefits are rising faster than the rate of inflation. Well, in 1999 or 2000, the Republicans finally successfully passed a bill, and Clinton signed it, that recalculates the CPI. So now, when the government says, hey, the CPI is at 3%, it's really 4.5% because they've reduced it by 1.5%. And that's what benefits are linked to, is a CPI index. And one other thing I wanted to ask is on the budget. I heard one time, I don't know if this is true or not, when something is outsourced, when they're outsourcing or privatizing, some of that money is actually off budget, so it doesn't really appear on the budget. So that's why they like to off, or is it just certain
items? No. David, that's not true. But in terms of Social Security, let me just say a few things, a general statement, more specific. The general statement is, again, one of the results of the election is you're going to be hearing no serious discussion in Congress about privatizing Social Security. And let me say to the listener something that I have said to the people of Vermont many, many, many times. There are a whole lot of imminent problems facing our country. We have people sleeping out on the street. We have 47 million Americans without any health insurance. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. Global warming, to my view, is a major, major crisis that has to be dealt with. The gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider while the middle class is shrinking. We have really serious problems that have to be addressed today. The issue of Social Security is not one of those problems. For a start, Social Security can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 35 years. Second of all, with minor modifications, such as removing the ceiling so that people who earn large sums of money pay their 6.2% based on their total earnings rather than simply up to a level of $94,000, just doing that would go a very long way to solving the long-term financial problems of Social Security. Thirdly, in terms of the CPI, my view has long been that seniors have different needs than everybody else. Their CPI should be looked at differently. Most seniors are not going out buying laptop computers. What they are buying are prescription drugs, health care costs, and other things which are rising, in fact, a lot faster than is general inflation. And I think we should have a segregated cost of living analysis of the needs of senior citizens, what their basket of needs are, as opposed to the general population, which would mean, in fact, that they would get higher CPIs.
Yeah, well said. Marge in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. Toxic sludge is killing people, animals, and soil microorganisms. The EPA encourages land application of toxic sludge. Diseases like E. coli and mad cow can be passed into our soil from toxic sludge. Senator Sanders, I'm wondering if the Democratic-controlled Congress can get the Republican-controlled EPA to stop land application of toxic sludge and conduct genuine scientific research, further research into toxic sludge.
Well, Marge, that's a very good question. I can tell you I am on the Environmental Committee, as it happens, and I'm on the Energy Committee as well, which deals with a lot of environmental issues. Recently, the chair of the Environmental Committee, Barbara Boxer, suggested that the name of the EPA today should be not the Environmental Protection Agency, but the Environmental Pollution Agency. As bad as Bush has been on almost every area that you can think of, probably he has been worse in terms of the environment in general. They have given waivers to coal-burning plants that are polluting the air, causing global warming, making our kids sick. They have appointed representatives of polluting companies, the EPA agencies, and on it goes. What you will see in the coming months is more and more pressure being put on the EPA. But whether or not you can force George Bush to believe in science, I just don't know that you can. But we will do as much as we can. This is a very important issue.
Sandra in Berkeley, California. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Sanders, and it's so great to talk to you. I really admire you.
Thank you.
I'm probably a socialist, even though I'm a Democrat, Democratic. One thing that I wanted to say is kind of on top of what the caller before was saying is, and everybody is saying is, yes, we can bring, you know, indict these people. Yes, we can subpoena them. But what if they don't answer the subpoenas, like Condoleezza Rice? What are our options if I'm a pessimist, okay, because I've been seeing this happen for years, and everything that I've been seeing is going on, and people kept telling me I was crazy. And what I'm saying is people keep saying with this administration, no, they wouldn't do that, or no, I don't think they'll do that, and they do every single one of those things. So what if they don't answer subpoenas? What if they don't, you know what I'm saying? You got it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your question, Sandra. Look, let's be clear. This is certainly the worst administration in the modern history of the United States. And I will not be shocked if years to come, historians determine this is the worst administration in the history of our country. They are a tragedy, and I can go on for hours. Sandra just started the ball rolling. I mean, the impact they have had on America's position in terms of the entire world. We used to be the most admired country, now we're one of the least admired. Global warming, tax breaks to billionaires, increases in poverty, more people uninsured, the war in Iraq, and on it goes. Ultimately, what we do is we educate, we organize, we elect good people to the United States Congress, and a new president who's going to stand up for ordinary people. rather than for the wealthy and the powerful.
45 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman and Senator Bernie Sanders.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. Brian in Seattle, Washington, you're live on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator?
Brian? Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, Senator, I feel fear that the wall being constructed in northeast Baghdad is just setting the stage for a future event similar to the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. Senator, are my fears unfounded?
Well, Brian, I'm not so sure that wall is going to be built, to tell you the truth. I think the Prime Minister of Iraq does not think that's a particularly good idea. So it may not, in fact, be built.
Scott in Kalamazoo, Michigan. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to talk to you both. You guys are good Americans, and I appreciate what you guys do. My question revolves around the debate with the emergency appropriation that was going on last week.
Yep.
I agree with Senator Reid that, you know, if we follow the president's plan, that the war is lost. But at the same time, in order to change course, we're going to need veto-proof majorities in the Congress and the Senate. And the Republicans continue to charge that, you know, leaving Iraq in conditions similar to where we are now would be disastrous for America. So my question is, you know, how do you overcome that objection, which they repeat constantly to their constituency and our right-wing radio, and how do you build that veto-proof majority?
Well, first of all, I think that the position that I voted for yesterday, which is to bring our troops home as soon as within the next year, is a position supported by the vast majority of the American people. So the right-wing radio people may say whatever they want to say, but I think the American people no longer believe that staying in Iraq indefinitely without an exit plan, being in the middle of a terrible civil war, losing our focus on international terrorism, I don't think the American people think that that is a good idea. So I think we have got to continue to be aggressive. There's an election coming up in 08. I think the momentum is with us, not only in terms of growing disgust and frustration with the war in Iraq. There is anger over the economy and the growing gap between the rich and the poor and the loss of good-paying jobs. Bush has done nothing on health care except to make a bad situation worse. But what we have to do is we have to get out in the streets. We have to knock on doors. We have to organize people. France, you remember, had an election, Tom, last week. You know what their voter turnout was there?
No, I don't.
85%.
Wow.
85%. We have got to get ordinary working people, lower-income people, middle-income people involved, and young people involved in the political process.
But at the same time, the Republicans are doing everything they can to keep people from being allowed to
vote. We're going to turn that around as well. All right? Yeah. And yeah. We're moving very much the contrast, in a different direction. My goal is to make it as easy as possible for people to be able to vote. My goal is to move toward public financing of elections so big money does not control the electoral process. But at the end of the day, what we need is people actively involved, talking to their friends and their neighbors, talking to people who have different points of view than you do, and just turning them around so that we can move America in a very, very different direction than Bush has taken us.
Amen. Georgia in Manhattan Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, hi. Hello. When you were talking about the pharmacy company, I'm sorry, pharmaceutical company issues.
Yes.
And the, just the amount of control that they have and the lack of government oversight.
Yeah.
or us willing to negotiate with them. I was wondering if you had heard about this generic asthma inhaler that just got pulled off the market, that's the number one that everyone uses in the country. It was just pulled because, you know, the government, but I guess, says that not the medicine itself, but the unit that's used to inject it is bad for the environment.
Huh.
So now, and that was the only generic one, so now you're forced to use the name brands, which it's the same medicine, but the way it's used to spray and doesn't work at all, so you have to use more of it. And you have to, and if this is like a generic, this is like aspirin for asthmatics. And there was no warning, and I was just wondering if you'd heard about it.
Actually, I apologize, Georgia. I really am not familiar with that issue.
Richard, in New York City, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, sorry, I heard a little bit static there. First thing, I'd like the senator to know that I would prefer to have him and the rest of the Senate put up the fight and lose as opposed to just not putting up the fight because they know they're going to lose. That at least lets people know that we got to get out there and fight and get more of our representatives put in Congress. Thank you. My question is anything being done to preserve the evidence that has been gathered by Carol Lam's office so far?
I would suspect so. I'm not on the Judiciary Committee. I don't know, but I would suspect so.
I heard from one of our listeners in San Diego, Bernie, about
yeah.
this, who said that his understanding is that the new prosecutor is actually following up on these investigations. I had said earlier I thought that they were all dead, but I haven't gotten any confirmation one way or the other. So.
Okay. Well, I think to the degree that this issue is being profiled and a lot of attention is being paid toward it, makes it hard for the new prosecutors not to go forward.
Yeah. Mark, in Maine, we have about a half a minute, Mark. A real quick one.
Yeah, quickly. The fairness doctrine. I'm a big fan of it. Reagan killed it, even though Congress tried to make it mandatory.
We will bring back, very briefly, Mark, we are working on major media legislation, which would include the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, call it something like programming in the public interest rather than balancing or whatever.
Right. I think there's some misunderstanding of what the fairness doctrine requires. We'll call it what you want. Taking a hard look at corporate control over the media, consolidation of media, is something we must do, in my view.
Yeah. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, as he has been every Friday for 3.5 years now. Senator, thanks so much for being with us again and taking our calls.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Good talking
Thank
to you. Guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. It's 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be continuing to take your calls here on Everything Goes Friday. Right after the news at the top of the hour, and your opportunity to support your station by listening to these sponsors.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. Program on Air America Radio, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Dear nappy-headed corporate whore, that's how the email starts that I got from Richard the other day. He says, I'm a longtime listener and letter writer. I'm sure you've deleted many of my emails. For the most part, I agree with your point of view. I have to disagree with you on walking the talk. I used to order from your advertisers to make sure you stayed on the air. I've now written all of them and told them I can no longer order from them because of your current advertising practice. I frankly, Richard doesn't identify what he's objecting to, but he continues. He says, I am a frequent caller to a radio show on one of the networks that carries your show. We spend a lot of time lampooning the baldness products, the male rejuvenation products, gold certificates, shady real estate deals, false insurance sales, stock trading CDs, real estate tycoons sharing their free secrets, and every other late-night UHF TV advertiser Fox Network will no longer carry since moving top the majors. I will continue to write and call your advertisers and express my problems with your becoming a nappy-headed corporate whore. I still listen, but my computer spends as much time on mute as on programming. I will not listen to the lies of Scare America. They are no different than any corporation you rail against. I can only assume that you have joined them, either that or you are a good liar like the talking heads at Fox. Sorry I ever had to write a letter like this. Excuse me, I have to mute the sound. You would walk the talk. Got any huevos? Read my comment live. P.S. Yes, I call my senators and Kucinich's office to express support for repeal of Roe v. Wade and for impeachment. What did you do? Play another commercial? Well, Richard, I would submit to you, you can call me a corporate whore if you want, that's fine. I would submit to you that you're being a freeloader. This is how we stay on the air. Commercial talk radio is just that, commercial talk radio. We don't do fund drives. We don't spend a week asking you for money. We don't go to big corporations asking for large contributions so that we can say that it's underwritten. This is how we stay on the air, is commercial talk radio. Just a few seconds of inside radio stuff. When we go into a spot break, typically the first one or two spots you hear are coming down from the network. And then after that, you hear spots coming from your local radio station. And then the spot break ends and comes back to me. Okay? Just so you know. Both the network and Air America in this case and local radio stations from time to time are reaching out, they're trying to sell advertising. I mean, this is a major accomplishment. And sorry, a window just threw up and distracted me here. There are basically like junk spots and there are high quality spots. I want to share with you just a couple of real high quality spots. But the bottom line is, if you're hearing people that you don't support, you don't like, yeah, then ignore them. But when you hear an advertiser who actually cares about the radio station that you're on or about the network, please go out of your way to support those ads. It's very straightforward. If you hear ads that you don't like, then encourage people in your community to advertise on the radio station that you're listening or with the network that you're listening to, and that will help build them. Here, for example, this is, I originate this show out of KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. This is an ad for a local advertiser, Tom Dwyer, local automotive shop. And this is an example of great advertising from somebody who really cares.
Hi, this is Tom Dwyer of Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 230-2300. Our country is dangerously close to losing the protection our Constitution provides. Without KPOJ, we would have even less access to critical knowledge and information needed to help us protect our country from the onslaught of fascism. While Tom Dwyer Automotive Services is interested in delivering peace of mind service for your vehicles, nothing matters at this critical time as much as promoting and supporting progressive programming like KPOJ. From all of us at Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, thank you for your trust and support, and thank you for helping me support KPOJ.
Now that's an ad. This guy is advertising his services, and he's, you know, one of the best car mechanics in town, but it's an ad. And that's the kind of thing that we all want to hear more of on radio. If you want to hear more of progressive advertising on radio, then reach out to advertisers in your community and say, hey, you know, we'd rather hear from you than from the baldness formula. Why don't you advertise on the local radio station? Here's another
one. This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
So these are called a reverse endorsement in the advertising business. And basically it's where an advertiser says, I'm supporting this radio station. I'm supporting this network. It's A, some of the most powerful form of advertising out there. And B, it supports progressive talk radio. These kinds of advertisers are only going to advertise if you listen and respond to them. And that's what keeps progressive talk radio on the air. That's what grows progressive talk radio. So rather than killing the messenger, let's all get on board and try and work. Here's just, this will be the final thing in the end of my rant. This is another spot that ran on KPOJ here, the station that we originate our program from in Portland, for a bankruptcy lawyer. You'd think, a bankruptcy lawyer? How can a bankruptcy lawyer be talking about progressive things or even be progressive? Here he is, Aaron Varhola.
I'm Aaron Varhola, bankruptcy attorney. I've been a KPOJ listener since day one. I'm a debt relief agency and can help you file for bankruptcy. The new bankruptcy laws were written by credit card lobbyists to make it harder for people to file, and some people say you can't file for bankruptcy under the new laws. That's not true. Let me help you out. Call me at 503-546-7913 to see if bankruptcy is right for you. If you can't write this down right now, find my ads on the back of the Willy Week and the Mercury. That's 546-7913. Aaron Marhola, bankruptcy attorney.
I mean, it's just very straightforward, but it's also supportive of Progressive Talk Radio. So rather than complaining about, hey, you know, I don't like that advertiser, it sounds like something on late night TV, if that category of advertisers getting in there, it's typically what's called a bulk buy, where the advertising agency says, okay, we'll buy a million listeners and we'll toss some of them over here to this network and some over here to this network, and they're relatively inexpensive. The premium advertisers, the high quality advertisers, those who really care about being on are the ones that we want to reach, and we reach them through your efforts as well as our efforts. So, you know, you can participate in making Progressive Talk Radio something solid and something that'll last, and that's how you do it. And, you know, rather than, you know, not that I mind getting emails that take me to task, but rather than, you know, picking on the messenger, let's make this work for everybody. Dennis, and now on to Anything Goes Friday. Dennis in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today?
Well, it was about 15 minutes of real boring radio there, Tom. Well, what I'd like to say is that for 6 years I've heard that the Democrats did not have a majority, therefore could do nothing in Congress. Now we're hearing that for the next 2 years the Democrats don't have a big enough majority, therefore can do nothing in Congress. What's the relevancy of the Democratic Party? When you have a Bernie Sanders on and he makes a categorical statement that signing statements are unconstitutional, seems to me the follow-up question from you or any other talker should be, what evidence do you have of that, Senator, and what are you going to do about it?
Okay, thanks a lot, Dennis. Jim in Woodland Hills, California, what's in your mind, Jim?
Yeah, it kind of goes along with what the last guy said. I wanted to ask Bernie, but didn't get on. Since the Democratic leadership now is in the majority and can set the legislative agenda, I don't understand why they would bring any further war funding bills whatsoever to a vote. I mean, that was what they complained about before, is that they couldn't get things brought to a vote when the Republicans were in charge. Now they're in charge, so why not just let the war funding run out?
Yeah, that was my original suggestion. There is enough funding to go through the end of August. The other alternative, Joe Biden was talking last night about, well, let's bring together a war funding bill that only funds the construction of these Humvees that are battleproof, you know, so that at least our soldiers will be safe through the end of August. Or let's do it 1 month at a time or 2 months at a time. I think these are options that the Democrats are considering. They're sitting around doing strategy right now. Patsy in Faircrest, Washington. Hey, Patsy.
Hi, Tom. I didn't. you were so quick there. What I wanted to ask you is, a couple of weeks ago, you were doing an awful lot of stuff about Africa, mm-hmm. and I have a friend of mine who's practically blind. That's why I'm calling for her. And she had a question. She wanted to know, did you ever read the book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. Now, my next question is, it's real quick. How would I find the American corporations who do business in the Sudan on the Internet? Do you know?
Boy, I don't. That's a good question, Patsy. I would guess that there are organizations that are working to try to stop the genocide in Darfur, who probably are chronicling that, and you know, poking around with Google for a little while, we'll probably find them. I just don't know right off the top of my head who they are or where they are. I'm sorry. 16 minutes past the hour. I'll be taking your calls right after this. Anything Goes Friday. Stick around.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Past the hour on Anything Goes Friday. Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I'm not just a good Democrat. I'm honestly a great Democrat. I have participated in precinct walks. I've participated in phone banks. I've even run a couple of phone banks. I have done polling places on Election Day. I'm a great Democrat. However, the issue of illegal immigration has me stumped, and I'll tell you why. I work in an area that encompasses Oakland, California, which is a largely African-American community, and I have seen in the area how illegal immigration has affected the African-American population. One of the areas I work is near the docks, the Oakland port, and you can see row after row after row of what once were absolutely beautiful little Victorians, not fancy, but beautiful, and they were employing a large African-American community near the docks before technology took those jobs away. But now, in addition to technology, on top of that, illegal immigration has had a negative effect. And my
it's hitting the black middle class even harder than the white middle class.
And yeah, exactly. And I hate to see these communities blighted, and I don't want to feel like a racist. It is economic. It's not personal, and my party is letting me down.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. The Democrats have sold out, and so have the Republicans. And although the Republicans tend to be more, you know, fear race baiting stuff, and the Democrats seem to be more, let's go along with the corporations who are you know, paying the campaign fees or whatever.
Well,
but the bottom line, in my mind, the way to reframe this so it's neither, you know, neither a racial thing or an ethnic thing or anything else is to simply point out that we don't have an illegal immigration problem in the United States. The problem is not illegal immigrants. It's not the people. And all these folks who want to point at the people are pointing in the wrong place. The problem is the employers. We have an illegal employer problem in the United States. Our employers are looking for cheap labor in order to drive up profits, and people who are in the United States illegally are one of those sources of cheap labor. They're using them to break unions. I mean, this is why Walter Mondale and Cesar Chavez back in the 1960s marched from the Simi Valley down to the Mexican border in protest of illegal immigration, because illegal immigrants were being used to bust the United Farm Workers Union back in the 60s.
Correct. Cesar Chavez had a hard time organizing when they knew that as long as there was a constant stream of illegals coming in, it undermined his efforts.
Right.
This is, I'm very, very frustrated and very depressed. I watched the debates last night. Not one Democrat would stand up for what I think is an important issue that matters to Democrats.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, Kim, and I think that, you know, we need to have compassionate policies in the United States. No person, regardless of their immigration status, should be denied food or medicine. I mean, you know, just basic stuff on the one hand. On the other hand, denying people a job, yeah, I'm sorry. Every country in the world says if you want a job here, you either are a citizen or you have a work permit. It's very simple. And Kim, you know, spot on. We need to be, frankly, I think, holding both parties accountable on this, because they're both dropping the ball. Mike in Van Nuys. Hey, Mike.
Hello. I just would like to say something more about the listener-supported radio that you claim. I think it's wrong, very wrong for you to make that claim, because it is not directly supported by listeners. It's
it absolutely is, Mike. Well, okay, there's a third party involved, but here's the bottom line. If you call up the organic wine company and you order organic wine from them and tell them that you heard about them on this program, or you call Small Dog Electronics and tell them that you heard about it on this program, they are going to continue advertising on this program, which is what keeps the program going, which is what keeps the radio stations on the air. So it's a loop that also is encouraging economy.
That argument before.
On the other hand, if you're simply giving money to a radio station, then there's, which I'm not opposed to. I've done the fundraisers for the local community station here for a couple of years in a row, but if you're simply giving money to a radio station, it's only two-thirds as much of stimulating a local economy as if you're finding advertisers with whom you agree. I'm not suggesting that you should, you know, go to patronize advertisers with whom you disagree.
Well, I have no problem with you mentioning that it's an indirectly supported, but indirectly is very commonplace in this country, such as our indirect representative democracy, and we've seen how that's been hijacked. And I just want to
say... And we're taking it back.
That, huh?
And we're taking it back.
Look
at what's happening in Congress right now.
And that is one of the things that I don't like to see with the media being so indirectly supported by us, because it's so easy to hijack the message in media when when the media is not directly held accountable by two, four.
Right,
but
you do that with laws, not with funding. I don't think either one of us want all of the media in the United States to be owned by the government.
Who wants all or nothing? But when you make a claim like that, be accurate, please.
All right. I stand by the claim. This is listener-supported radio. You support this kind of you support commercial radio by supporting our sponsors. It's very simple. And by letting the radio stations know that you're listening and you appreciate the programming. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Hiking past the White House late one night, when our eyes beheld an eerie sight. The president appeared with hopes very strange for zombies and vampires of global climate change. It's not global warming, say oil company disciples. Our math tells us it's natural weather cycles. These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levees. They're doing the climate mash.
The climate mash.
Real science is bad.
Climate mash.
Solutions are trash.
The climate mash.
And they do it for the cash.
Yeah.
The creatures were having fun. Our Congress was overrun. We couldn't tell the mindless zombies from the elected ones. Now we can stop this. We have the technology. But first we have to get past industry ideology. We need your help. I'm glad to show you how. Tell your leaders in Washington to save our climate now.
You're doing a heck of a job, zombie. Hey, the snow melted. Great. So we can drill over here. Yeehaw. And here. And here. And here.
That's Bobby Pickett. He died at the age of 69 last night. And his big hit in 1962 was the Monster Mash, and then about 2-3 years ago, he remade it as Climate Mash, the song you just heard in its entirety. And so a salute to Bobby Pickett. Bobby sometimes referred to as Boris Pickett for that piece. May you have good sailing as you move forward. Richard in Long Island, New York. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I have heard in the past Randy Rhoads make mention of advertisers that either pulled their advertising or refused to advertise with Air America based on pressure from right-wing organizations or activist groups. And Randy Rhoads isn't big on consumer boycotts, so she doesn't say who those corporations or advertisers are. I was wondering, is there any way that you know of who these corporations are? Because I would like to go out of my way to not support them and let them know that until they come around to their senses and realize that left-leaning people are just as big, in fact, more of a sizable consumer base than the right-wing, and the only difference is they're bigger crybabies than we are.
Yeah, we actually have a more educated and more affluent demographic than conservative talk radio. It's a more desirable listener base for advertisers. There is a blacklist for Air America Radio, but there's also a blacklist for the Rush Limbaugh Show. The blacklist is not, by and large, corporations who don't want to be on progressive talk radio, or for that matter, conservative talk radio, because they disagree with the politics. There's a list of maybe 80 to 100 companies that just don't want to be involved in any kind of politics. They just want to sell, shampoo or something. And so they'll, and and frankly, every show. I mean, there are advice shows that have blacklists. There are travel shows that have blacklists because people just, you know, they think that their product is not appropriate on that kind of show. So it's not a matter of our being bullied. What I'm trying to do, or what my mention, and this is really apropos of nothing more than just getting this email from this guy and thinking, you know, clearly some people just don't understand how this business works and all that, is that there are right-wing, there's like 30 times as much right-wing talk radio out there as there is progressive talk radio. And part of it is because it's been around for 15 years longer than progressive talk radio. And part of it is because a lot of big corporations are essentially right-wing. And they want to get results, and B, they have this natural proclivity to promote that. But as advertisers discover that progressive talk radio will work, then they're going to advertise more. For example, in Ohio, I mean, we were on four or five stations in Ohio, progressive talk radio. I mean, right across the board, not just talking about this program. They're all gone from Ohio. And in every case, the claim was, hey, our advertisers didn't know if they were getting a response or not. So I know that there are a number of stations that are doing very well. I'm broadcasting from one right here in Portland, Oregon, KPOJ, and doing great. There's a whole bunch of them. And I want our listeners to be part of that process. I want to give our listeners an opportunity to promote progressive talk radio to grow it, frankly. I mean, it's just the bottom line. So it's not so much, you know, they're out to get us, Richard, as we need to be proactive. Make sense?
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not so much, your answer drifted in a little bit of a direction where about the blacklist, and I understand that, but I was referring more specifically to advertisers who had, in effect, responded to right-wing threats to, well, we'll put out a boycott on our radio if you advertise with Air America. I would like to contact those folks.
To the best of my knowledge, Richard, Randy probably knows something I don't in that regard. I don't know if that ever – it certainly never happened with this program. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Richard. I appreciate the point. And the other point that I want to make, by the way, is – I was rhetorically asking this question of my friend Rob Call the other night, who does opednews.com. I said, you know, you see companies that manufacture aircraft and that manufacture oil drilling platforms advertising on the evening news. And you have to ask yourself, are they advertising because they want to sell an oil drilling platform to me? I don't think so. I think that they're trying to influence the news. Frankly, that's my opinion. And the same with some sponsorship of some of the larger national public radio programs. I'm frankly concerned that investigative journalism isn't being done because of those. And again, progressive talk radio being sponsored by progressive companies, if you get out there and you get involved and say, yeah, you know, this is a good company. You know, I really like the organic wine company. I'm going to, you know, it's a small company. I'm going to help them out by giving them a call at 1-888-ECO-WINE. You know, that kind of thing. That helps. And listening for your local sponsors who are obviously intentionally sponsoring progressive programming. Those are the ones that you really want to say thanks to. George in Denver, Colorado. Hey, George.
Hey, Tom. First, I wanted to say I agree with Mike Malloy. He says if he can have your head, he'd throw his away.
and vice versa. You know, Mike and I were in Phoenix together a couple of weeks ago, and Mike is a good friend and one of the best broadcasters in this industry, and I like him a lot.
I have a man love for Mike Malloy. But hey, I wanted you to watch a Google video called Pentacon, C-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
It's real good, and I hope you would watch it. And I was hoping.
Is this? My recollection is that this is one of the ones about what happened on 9/11.
Right, and you know what I was going to say was, it took 444 days for them to have an investigation, and that was them being dragged, kicking and screaming by the 9/11.
And that wasn't an investigation. That was a mild inspection, shall we say?
It was a whitewash.
Yeah. Okay. I'll agree with that term.
George.
Go ahead.
And according to the BBC and the head of the FBI, 9 of the hijackers are alive and well. In fact, one's flying airplanes for Saudi Airlines.
Yeah, that's probably one of the weaker things for us to be waving around as a flag, because it may well be that, I mean, you got a lot of people with very similar names.
These guys actually said, no, I trained flying planes down in, United States, and they're the guys, trust me, but...
But the mainstream media would never let anyone know that. But I heard the head of the FBI say that they had the identities wrong.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, and I've seen documentaries that lay that out, and I just, you know, without more independent analysis and investigation, I don't think that we can say that we know, and that's the point, that we need some real investigations of 9/11, and there's some great people out there from David Ray Griffin, you know, right across the board, Alex Jones and others who are, you know, priming the pump, but some real serious investigative reporting needs to be done on this as I've said, just like with the Kennedy assassination, I think it's going to take decades. Tragically, Dorothy and Raymond Washington. Hey, Dorothy.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. There are three things I wanted to throw out there, like the corporate media. I don't know if you listened to Bill Moyers Wednesday night.
I did. I watched it was brilliant. In fact, I believe we talked about it on this program.
Well,
people,
I heard,
if they want to watch it, they can watch it on the PBS website at pbs.org/Moyers/journal/btw/watch.html. It's easy to Google, and it's easy to find on the pbs.org website. And I believe that they're going to be replaying this documentary as time goes on.
Tomorrow, I guess, at 1:30.
Check your local programming thing, because the national, you know, the network puts it out, but then the local affiliates decide when they're going to carry it. But good point, Dorothy, and thank you very much for making it. Lee in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Lee.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. This is great. I was wondering if this might not be a good time to consider rescinding taxation exemption status for all organized religions. When
you know,
consider where that money comes from and where it goes, I think it might be a good time for them to help fund the war that they put the money for the campaigns to keep it going.
Yeah. Given that religious publishing, for example, in the United States is a multi-billion-dollar industry, religious broadcasting in the United States is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's using the infrastructure of this country, it's using the court system, it's using the monetary system, it's using the airwaves, it's using all of our commercial infrastructure and paying for none of it. I don't disagree. I think that it's something that we, at the very least, should have a serious conversation about in America. David in Indiana. Hey, David.
Yeah, good morning. I was listening to your program or another program on Air America, and they're talking about somebody was wondering, are they going to privatize military medical care? Well, they really started doing that around 1991, because prior to my retirement from the military, I was given the task of gathering data on how much it was costing our medical center to provide inpatient care. And the purpose of this data was to compare our cost of providing inpatient care with that of civilian hospitals. Well, in 2005, I returned to the medical center where I was stationed at and found that the five-story medical center was no longer providing inpatient care. It was still outpatient ER care.
And this is, you're right, David, and this is where Bernie said, and the caller earlier said, and I absolutely agree, that the military should be doing what the military does right across the board, and they should be providing their own services, whether it's KP, you know, whether it's food or whether it's medical services. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Anything Goes Friday, taking your calls on any topic you'd like to talk about. And we'll be getting back to your calls in just a few minutes. Right now, first, though, Victoria Jones, our correspondent with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., on the line, and we want to get an update here on what's happening in the bizarre world of politics. Victoria, welcome.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Tom. It is indeed a bizarre world. It's a world where on Friday the entire thing grinds to a halt. It's It's extraordinary like that. Well, one thing that that we just heard is that Henry Waxman has actually asked 27 federal departments and agencies to turn over information related to these White House briefings about elections or political candidates.
This is a big deal.
27.
Yeah, this is a big deal. If Rove and the Bush White House have violated the Hatch Act with 27 different agencies hundreds of times, we're talking about what at the very least could be indictable and prosecutable and go to jail, you know, do not get a free pass card crimes, and could even be impeachable.
And it's going to be, at least it's going to be seen to be in the beginning, a question of interpretation and of understanding. Oh, I didn't think that was the Hatch Act because my understanding of it was that this was just a briefing and I didn't think that I did anything wrong. It's going to be that it was inadvertent, it was unintentional, and so how could it possibly be a violation of the Hatch Act if it wasn't intended?
Yeah, and these are the talking points that they're putting out there. Oh, it's just about the political landscape. We're just talking about the political climate. And it's amazing how the talking points, you know, the RNC puts out the talking points and they're all over the place. I mean, everybody's repeating them now. But the bottom line is that this is using our tax dollars. It's using the political process and apparatus, the governmental apparatus of the United States of America to try to advance a political agenda rather than a partisan political agenda rather than the people's work.
It's going to be interesting to see whether this will be able to get traction with the American people. It's one of those fiddly kinds of topics. That,
yeah.
It's not so much an insider topic, but it's a bit wonkish.
Yeah, it's kind of on the edge. Interesting. Anything else happening, Victoria?
Well, the other big thing is not so much fallout, but reaction to last night's debate of the eight presidential candidates, including the rather bizarre former senator from Alaska. The feeling,
Mike Gravel.
Yes, exactly. The feeling seems to be that Obama and Clinton both did very well. Not that others didn't. I mean, but the strong feeling was that anybody else really is playing catch up. That what this really did demonstrate was that you can be a Joe Biden and you can make a lot of sense on some of the issues, whether you agree with him or not, but that you've got so much ground to cover. That John Edwards has an enormous amount of ground to cover. He took some very landed jabs at the leaders, but nevertheless, it was a match between the two of them, it seems to be the consensus. But people are putting Obama out as having been the winner. My personal opinion, if you want some editorial comment, is that I'm not sure that I would agree with that.
Who do you think, then, was the...
Well, I thought that that Hillary Clinton actually came across as very presidential.
She did a good job of kind of walking down the middle, not sounding... shrill, which she's been accused of, not sounding, just going down the middle. You know, she, all the various categories that people have tried to put her into.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. She.
And that's what she had to do, I think.
Yeah, and she accomplished that. I thought Barack Obama comported himself very, very well. He needs to de-ah himself, but other than that, I thought he did very well. And I was frankly very impressed by what Senator Gravel said and what Dennis Kucinich said. And I know that people thought that Mike Gravel was going off like, you know, some kind of whack job, but he's been on this program several times. I've interviewed him several times, and he's very outspoken, very opinionated. They should have known what they were going to get, number one. And number two, I think that in some cases he was speaking truths that needed to be said.
He was speaking truths that needed to be said. I think part of it was the way that he said it. And I think he could have better expressed himself. Dennis Kucinich, I think, came across very well. And he is putting out a platform that is unique, that none of the others, you know, are going anywhere near when it comes to being anti-war. He is truly anti-war. He's anti-all war, and he's unapologetic about it. And I think he put his point across extremely well.
Yeah.
The best Mike I've Gravel's ever seen him.
Mike Gravel's biggest problem was being an amateur curmudgeon. Well, he's a professional curmudgeon. But,
so he is.
I'm the senior statesman here, and they didn't give me enough time to talk. I mean, come on. You know, let's talk about the issues. But beyond that, and what was interesting to me was how kinesthetic Bill Richardson is. He obviously experiences everything through his feelings. When he was being asked a question, he was like leaning forward and wincing and moving around and like that. And Louise said, why is he, you know, it doesn't look good on TV. Why is he moving like that? And I said, because he's kinesthetic. He's not an auditory or visual person. He has to feel something in order to know it. And he's trying to take this information in through his ears and convert it into feelings in his body. And she was like, oh, that makes a certain amount of sense. And then the first words out of his mouth when he answered the question was, I feel the same way.
Oh, how interesting.
Those were his words. And his language is entirely kinesthetic. It's entirely about feelings. And he's the most, and you see him afterwards, everybody, he went up to them, he'd have his hands on them, he put his hand on Dennis Kucinich's shoulder, he's like a big bear that wants to hug everybody all the time. He is totally about feelings. And frankly, I think that works against him in television and probably works in his favor in person.
And that also may work against him in terms of the complaints that some women have lodged.
Yes.
Women who
yes.
say that he touches them. Well, he probably
that
does.
He touches everybody when he talks to them. That's what kinesthetic people do, by and large. I don't think he's a groper. I think he's just a classic kinesthetic person. They represent 5 to 15% of our population, and a much higher population, by the way, among Aboriginal and Indigenous people, people who are raised outside of the European culture. And it probably helps him connect with a lot of the folks in New Mexico, but not so much, as I said, in the TV world, in the TV age. There, I think it's a problem. But the other problem I had was that it wasn't a debate.
No, it wasn't a debate at all. No.
It was serial presentations. And are we ever going to see an actual debate, do you think?
No, we're not. I don't think it's going to be possible. I don't see how you debate with that number of candidates. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
You won't see a debate until it's two.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Well made. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
57 minutes past the hour. Right back with your calls.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Small Dog Electronics literally started in a garage 12 years ago, but with the mixture of great prices, a huge product selection, and excellent customer service, they've grown into the third largest Apple specialist in America. Small Dog Electronics is a nationally recognized, socially responsible business. They operate with multiple bottom lines. Their mission statement reads that their effect on their community, environment, customers, and employees is just as important as maintaining profitability. If you're looking for gear for your Mac or PC, if you're looking for a new or refurbished Apple computer, or if you're simply looking for a case for your iPod, visit smalldog.com. Also, check out their Tom Hartman page at smalldog.com/tomhartman.html. You'll find information about how to subscribe to my podcasts and about their e-waste recycling initiative. Give them a call at 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-6227. April 28th is tomorrow. A28.org, the website for impeachment actions all across the United States. Impeachment summer begins this spring. Our number 1-866-303-2270. It's Anything Goes Friday, taking your calls on any topic. First, Bob Furtick is on the line from Democrats.com and A28.org. Hey, Bob, just a quick rundown of what's happening this weekend.
We got over 125 events from Miami, Florida to the North Pole, Alaska. We're flying airplanes. We're doing laser shows. People just come and bring your radio so you can listen to Air America while you're having a great time spelling impeach.
We have an impeach Bush hot air balloon going up here in Portland.
That's awesome.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's hot air. It's, you know, one of those giant balloons. You know, what do they fill them with, helium or something? But anyway, you get the point. Great. So, Bob, the bottom line is people can learn all about this by simply going to a28.org, right?
That's right.
Okay, great. Bob, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the great work you're doing over there at Democrats.com and at a28.org. 1-866-303-2270, your telephone number. Anna in Northampton, Massachusetts. Hey, Anna.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I figured you would. I have a sort of synthesized theory from two of your different theories, the one being about tariffs, which I had not really understood before, that if a company wants to make a good outside the U.S. For cheaper, that they, when they import it, would pay the difference between that price and what it would cost to make here.
Right.
So I was thinking about that, and then with the illegal employer problem, that maybe, you know, if we do establish a guest worker program with Mexico, for instance, that you could, you know, if people are willing to work for less, then maybe the company pays them less but makes up the difference between that and minimum wage and puts that extra money into some sort of fund for, I don't know what, but do you see what I mean?
I do, and it's a nice theory. Where it breaks down is that the whole goal of it gets back to Ricardo's Iron Law of Wages from 1816, and that is that as you increase the supply of labor, you'll drive down its cost. And so the minimum wage is not going to go up as long as there's a surplus of supply of labor. So even if you were to say, you know, what you would be suggesting is kind of a variation on wage controls. Even if you were to say, okay, you have to pay, you know, let's say the minimum wage is $7 an hour. Okay, you have to pay $7 an hour. Everything would get stuck at that. You would still see all the basically the middle class. You would see the wages running from $12 an hour to $35 an hour, more or less, or whatever that range is that makes the middle class in America. You'd see all of that start migrating downward as a consequence toward that minimum wage, and the minimum wage would become sort of the benchmark that all the companies would be moving toward. Oddly, you know, one of the first things that we outlawed in the United States that used to be standard in England in the 1700s was maximum wage laws. There used to be laws in the United Kingdom and in the United States before we became a republic, which said that it's illegal to pay people for certain types of work, typically factory work or work that had to do with the British East India Company. It's illegal to pay more than a certain amount. So it was a way of maintaining a class of the working poor.
Well, as a social worker, I feel like I sort of am under that law as it is right now.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. And the maximum wage laws, if they're not explicit, they're done by the simple principles of economics that have to do with supply and demand of labor. And that's why guest worker programs are just, you know, basically legalized slavery. They're not good for the guest workers, and they're not good for the country. You know, what we need to do is figure out how much labor we need in this country to be able to maintain a decent price for labor, and then fix our immigration policies around that number. It's what we've always historically done. It's what every other country in the world does. It's just what makes sense, and do it in a way that doesn't have fear in it, and doesn't have racism in it, and doesn't have all the nonsense that's out there. That just, you know, hey, this is the practical reality of economics. Anna, thank you for the call and for your kind comments. Bob in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Say, there was a story here in the Seattle area a couple weeks ago that our bees, you know, like buzzing bees, are disappearing.
Yeah.
And
it hit Oahu today, by the way.
Well,
That the Associated Press reported that for the first time, bees now are infected with mites, which are one of the many causes apparently for this in Oahu, Hawaii, and they're freaked out because if it gets to the Big Island, it's one of the major sources of queen bees for the rest of the United States because it's been such a pristine area, and they're just, you know, the beekeeping industry, as it were, is just totally freaked out right now.
Yeah, I think they said 60% of our crops are pollinated by bees. In fact, they had a local story here on local beekeepers and their concern. And you say, do you know what? There's a mite infestation. Is that what's causing this? Because they didn't really get into cause of the disappearance of the bees.
Yeah, well, it started back a decade or so ago with a mite that was that I believe either came from Europe or Africa that was infecting bees in the United States and killing them. And so they started using insecticides or miticides or whatever to kill off these mites. What we're seeing right now though, and we've just been seeing in the last 12 to 24 months, is what they're calling now colony collapse disorder, and it's like bee AIDS. They're finding dead bees that have, in some cases, 5 or 10 different concurrent viral infections, plus a couple of funguses, plus bacteria, plus a parasite, you know, a mite. And nobody's sure what's causing this, whether it's genetically modified crops, whether it's some of the new nicotine-based insecticides that are being used that have just been rolled out in the last couple of years, whether it's changes in climate, whether it's new fungus that's appearing, whether it's new viruses that have mutated. There's this huge mystery, and a lot of people are very concerned about it. Albert Einstein said that if all the bees vanish, humanity has 4 years to go. There are some crops like almonds and apples that are 100% pollinated by bees, and entire species could be. I mean, there are others that are simply pollinated by the wind or by other insects or by birds. But there's a not insignificant handful of species of plants that are entirely pollinated by bees, and a lot of people are very worried about this. And this is just something we need to keep an eye on. There's a lot of people trying to figure out what's though causing colony collapse disorder, and nobody at this point knows. I've been reading Science. I'm a AAAS member, and I subscribe to Science and Nature and New Scientist and Science News. There's four publications that I actually read every week, and it's just there's a lot of verging on hysteria in the scientific community about this. Bernie in Tacoma. Hey, Bernie, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was listening to you a few months ago, and you were talking about the importance of advertising, as I was complaining to myself about how much advertising that goes on your radio station. But you said something that changed my perspective, and it's this. That's the price we have to pay for the issues getting out there. It's just a give and a take. And
that's
then I've noticed lately that larger corporations have been advertising on your radio station. I noticed that today, and then this topic came up. But what I see is that we're having a greater audience, a greater impact, reaching more people when you have bigger corporations. Would I be right in assuming that?
By and large, yeah. There's two kinds of big corporation advertising on radio. There are where they say, hey, we very much want to advertise on this radio station because we are getting results on it. And that's the desirable. I mean, they're paying actually a higher price for the advertising. And then there are the advertisers who simply say to the giant advertising agency consolidators, you know, if you've ever got unsold time, we'll buy an ad for half price or something like that just to fill that time. And those are the less desirable advertising. And basically, you get more and more of the more desirable kinds of advertising on radio if the listeners respond to the ads and also respond to the radio stations, and that then makes the radio stations financially healthy, and that guarantees that the message keeps getting out there. So that's how it works without getting too inside radio about it. But Bernie, thank you for the call. Jerry in Long Island. Hey Jerry, just a minute before we've got to take a break.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my call. Yeah, with respect to the current war funding legislation that goes to Bush's desk next week, on the news hour last night it said the Democrats may strip out of the war funding legislation troop withdrawal timelines if Bush vetoes the legislation as expected. This really pisses me off, and I think we all need to call, email, and fax our senators and congresspersons and tell them not to cave in and not to give Bush one dime of the war money he wants.
I agree, Jerry. Let me put one caveat on that. Don't email them.
What?
And don't email them, and for that matter, don't write them. If you write a letter to your elected members in Washington, D.C., it can take as much as 6 weeks to get through the anti-anthrax system. So writing letters to your local offices of your senators and your members of Congress, good idea. Writing to Washington, D.C., a bad idea. Email, increasingly members of Congress are just simply ignoring their email because they're just in overwhelm. They're getting 100,000 emails a day. There's no way that they could even hire enough staff to read them. So really the most effective way to have your voice be heard is either to show up at or call the local office or the national office of your elected representatives. 202. This is the telephone number for Congress on Capitol Hill. 202-225-3121. Back with Anything Goes Friday right after this.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
Of stocking looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes. Good authors too, who once knew better words, now only use for leather words, writing prose. Anything goes.
Steve in Los Angeles, welcome to the program. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
I'm fine. What's up?
Excellent. You know, I've been a talk radio listener since 1989, which was started out as conservative radio. To me, it's gotten conservative and moved to the middle, independent thought. And now when Air America came on, I'd say maybe a few years ago, I was very excited. I would finally have the other side of the equation in the format that I like and so many other radio listeners. And I was disappointed. I heard a lot of Bush this, Bush that. But I got to say, they seem to have changed their programming, and your show is up to the caliber that I appreciate and respect. And I'm grateful to have you on the air, and I'm going to be tuning in a lot.
Thank you, Steve. Is that why you called?
Well, I guess that's kind of the start. I wanted to say that your topic in the previous hour was how is progressive talk radio going to succeed? And basically, from my observations and my listenings, it's to get the listeners attracted to the station, and that's through the hosts being personable, setting the tone, setting the topics, but allowing two-way dialogue and being open about where they stand on issues and just being facilitating a discussion and an honest debate on the topics. And I think that's where most people become convinced and they can decide for themselves, but they trust the information they're getting and they appreciate the points that are presented from the opposing side. And I think that's really key.
Yeah, well said, Stephen. And hopefully we're all doing that and doing it well. And thank you for your kind words. Dan in San Diego, California. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind today?
Oh, not too much. I just sort of wanted to take people to task. You know, too many people are complaining about the Democrats aren't doing this and that. And
Democrats are taking names and kicking butt right now.
Yeah, I mean, they've only been there 4 months, and, I mean, like, they've got their plate full. You know, they besides looking at what happened in the past and fixing it, they have to take care of current business, and they need to look at what Rove, you know, who, in my opinion, is actually the vice president, Cheney's president. They have to look at what Rove is laying for the future, you know, something.
Oh, I want to send Henry Waxman a plaque or something. I mean, I just, there's not enough that I could say to about how much I admire Henry Waxman. He's great.
Yeah, I mean, and the Democrats, they're flawed, but, I mean, they're lesser of the evils, you know. What are we going to do, go with the Republicans again? You know,
I even say let's go a step beyond that. I've never been a fan of the lesser of two evils. Rather than saying let's just support the Democrats because they're not as bad as the Republicans, my position is let's become the Democrats. Let's infiltrate the Democratic Party. Let's show up at the Democratic Party meetings. Let's run for local offices in the Democratic Party. Become the chairperson of the local Democratic Party and run for dog catcher. I mean, let's work your way up. Let's start getting people into the system, progressives into the system, and take over the Democratic, have progressives take back, not take over, take back the Democratic Party. The radical right-wing wackos who took over the Republican Party in the 60s, 70s, and 80s had never before controlled the Republican Party. They had never had, frankly, any power in the United States. And look at the kind of damage that they've done. But progressives have run the Democratic Party before. Jefferson ran the Democratic Party in the early days. Franklin Roosevelt ran the Democratic Party in the 30s. It's time for progressives to take back the Democratic Party again. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey.
Hi, Tom. How are you today? I'd like to talk about solar energy storage, and that's the key. That's considered the key to creating a national solar energy infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And on a utility level, concentrated solar power is a simple and effective technology which concentrates sunlight with mirrors to create heat to drive turbines and electric generators, just like conventional solar, just like conventional power stations. And heat captured by concentrated solar power plants can be stored in melted salts like nitrates of sodium and potassium so that electricity generation can continue at night or on cloudy days. And they have these concentrated solar plants in Texas, but they also are recently opening up the largest one in the world in Ontario, Canada. And here in California, Pacific Gas and Electric recently joined with a number of advocates for plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, they showcased a Toyota Prius, which they turned into a plug-in hybrid in Sunnyvale by putting new lithium-ion batteries. And the new lithium-ion batteries store about 9 kilowatts of electricity, so they can actually be used to power your home. The average home uses about 2.5 kilowatts per hour. So the plug-in.
So your car and your home become kind of an interactive dance.
Right, it could work for several hours there, and PG&E already did the testing, and that's their numbers. So it's imperative at this time that we cover our residential, commercial, and industrial, and governmental buildings as well as airport rooftops and seaport rooftops with solar electric roof shingles and solar electric roof panels, so as to be ready for the coming plug-in hybrid electric revolution. And this is our chance to slow climate change. We can work together. I say, let's get solar.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Amen, Harvey. You're welcome. Spot on. I totally agree with you. And let's try not to have centralized distribution of electricity. This is where the big utilities, the Enron wannabes of the world, are going to try and take solar power and every other kind of power, as they're going to say, and particularly nuclear power, obviously. They're going to say, oh, but we have to have these centralized power stations. You've got somewhere between 10 and 17% of all electricity in the United States is lost in long-line distributions just through waste. If local communities, local neighborhoods, and individual homes are generating their own power, there's not the big bucks for the utilities, but there's a whole lot more safety and security for all of us. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
America, it's me, G to the WB, your president number 43, land of the brave and sort of kind of free, trying to keep it real up here in D.C. You feel that? That's your groove. Make you move. People wonder sometimes what I've been thinking. My approval ratings are low and they just keep on sinking. It's enough to drive a drinking man back to drinking, so I grab a 40 and go sit by my man Lincoln. Now, Saddam Hussein, he was a gangster. More tricks up his sleeve than the prankiest prankster. He was a bad man. He had WMD. You don't mess around with the GWB. Now everyone's saying we're in a quagmire, saying I was wrong and calling me a liar. But I don't care. I don't need nobody. Iraq ain't my fault. The intelligence was cruddy. But go on, criticalizers. Go on and judge. I got my spin doctors, MCs Limbaugh and Drudge. So deal with it, country. You all voted for us. Now check out my Republican base while I take it to the courts. I'm a serious George. Some say a delirious George. Make me angry. I'm a furious George. But mostly, I'm a curious George.
Yeah, right. Indeed. 35 minutes past the hour. Is it Sabin in Santa Fe, New Mexico, or Sabine?
Yes, Sabin.
Sabin. I'm sorry. Hey, Sabin. What's up?
Well, first of all, we're thrilled that you're coming to Santa Fe soon.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Week after next, as I recall.
Yes. So thank you for coming here. What I wanted to talk about was recently you've been citing the quotation from Niemöller, who said, first they came for the Jews and I wasn't a Jew.
Well, actually, it didn't start with that. I think it's first they came for the socialists or the communists. Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what I submit for consideration is that the first never-ending war was the war on drugs. And they have systematically been rounding up our citizens. We're the highest per capita incarceration rate in the world.
Yeah, the war on drugs was really a war on African Americans and a war on the poor in the United States, and a very, very racist and very classist and very Republican in its motivation. And it needs to be seen for exactly what it is. You're absolutely right, Sabin.
Well, and yeah. I would like to make one other point.
Yeah.
We're exporting what we did at Abu Ghraib. If you check into Lane McCotter and the other three men that set up Abu Ghraib, they were all former Department of Corrections officials who had either resigned under a cloud or been fired and consequently sued for people that were tortured and murdered in U.S. domestic prisons.
Jeez. Okay. Well, thanks for the information on that. I mean, this. By the way, last week on the 20th, or maybe it was this week, it was the 25th, I read at some length from an op-ed or a book review that I had written a year or so ago for Buzzflash.com. It is our book of the month right now on Buzzflash.com, which is Milton Mayer's They Thought They Were Free, about how the Nazis took over Germany. I think you'll find it fascinating. You can find it over at Buzzflash.com. Chris in Santa Fe. Oh, Santa Fe. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Oh, no, I'm late. I just wanted to get your take. I was absolutely stunned to learn late yesterday, and I've seen a couple reports today, that the Iraqi parliament has announced that it is going to take its summer vacation. It is going to be out of session through all of July and all of August. They're not going to meet. I mean, no talk about, you know, reunifying the parties, no talk about security plans. Wasn't that the point of the surge, to help them get their political act together? This is, it's pointless.
Yeah, the Iraqi government is totally dysfunctional at this point. You can't govern a country that's in the middle of a civil war. It's and this may well just be an acknowledgement of that, Chris. It is, and probably, well, we'll see. Probably they'll stick around long enough to make sure that the oil companies get their oil, and then off they go. I have a feeling that there's been a lot of palms greased, a lot of cash passed, and frankly, a lot of terror inflicted on some of the better of these members. You combine that with Sadr telling his representatives not to participate, and it's a prescription for a disaster. It has been for a long time, and it's getting worse and worse. Ryan in Michigan. Hey, Ryan, what's on your mind today?
It's
on 1290 AM. Hey, Ryan.
Yeah, I have about three questions here today. My first one would be what your opinion was of Mike Gravel.
Mike Gravel has been on our program a couple of times, and I think that he's the guy who was asking the tough questions. He was, you know, just last night in the debate, Mike Gravel spoke what you might call an unpleasant, an uncomfortable truth, and he's done that on this program as well. He just speaks out. The problem is that he comes across as, you know, it was the Ross Perot problem. He comes across as kind of an eccentric, cranky guy. Here's the clip from last night with the setup with the question.
Senator Gravel, at a forum earlier this year, I want to get this right, you said it doesn't matter whether you are elected president or not. So then, why are you here tonight? Shouldn't debates be for candidates who are in the race to win the race?
Ryan, you're right. I made that statement. But that's before I had a chance to stand with them a couple, three times. It's like going into the Senate. You know, the first time you get there, you're all excited. My God, how did I ever get here? Then about 6 months later, you say, how the hell did the rest of them get here? And I got to tell you, after standing up with them, some of these people frighten me. They frighten me. When you have mainline candidates that turn around and say that there's nothing off the table with respect to Iran, that's code for using nukes, nuclear devices. I got to tell you, I'm President of the United States. There will be no preemptive wars with nuclear devices. In my mind, it's immoral, and it's been immoral for the last 50 years as part of American foreign policy.
And he can, excuse me, continues along those lines, and I thought it was a pretty good riff, frankly. Unfortunately, as I said, Mike Gravel sometimes comes across as not quite polished enough to be president, let's say. Tony in Arcata, California. Hey, Tony.
Hey. Well, I'm a liberal. I'm a businessman. I realize some liberals may have trouble connecting the two concepts, and I'm glad that there's a venue like this for me to advertise on if I so chose. And I wonder, where would that mechanic have a chance to do a radio spot like the one he did if it weren't for shows like this?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, Tony, for putting in a good word there. Jerry in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Jerry.
Hi. I just want to mention that there was a media advisory put out last fall by FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy
right.
in Reporting. And it
right.
was an internal memo they reported on from ABC Radio Networks to all their affiliates. And it basically said that their commercials would never be placed on syndicated Air America programming that airs on ABC affiliates. It gives a list to include Hewlett-Packard to go on from there. Some
yeah,
of the biggest...
no, Jerry, let me just stop you right there. No need to go through the list. It's, first of all, anybody can Google it. It's easy to find.
Right.
It's the Air America blacklist. As I said, you'll find a nearly identical blacklist for Rush Limbaugh. This is not... In my opinion, there may be two or three companies on there that just don't want to be associated with anything liberal. But I'll tell you, I've been in this business for a lot of years, and this is not, that part of it is not about some conservative conspiracy. The conservative conspiracy, to the extent that there is one, is that in some markets there have been, you know, people buying out radio stations in order to get them off the air. In my opinion, but. You know, even that is pushing the envelope. Frankly, I think what we need to do as progressives is support the vehicle, the medium that is providing progressive talk radio. It's really simple. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin.
Hey, Tom. There's a Republican here in Florida.
And by the way, Armin, let me thank you for listening to this program and calling into this program for going on 5 years now. You're one of our longest and oldest and most reliable callers and listeners, and I tip my hat to you, sir.
Well, I have to be honest and tell you all, people that care, that I started calling when Crooked Ronnie got in. And I fell for Crooked Ronnie at first until I became educated about the people that hung with him. And Ralph Nader did have a really good book called Reagan's Ruling Class.
Yep.
And I wasn't paying any attention then, like a lot of people. I was more concerned with sports and other things because you got to remember when Reagan first got in and started implementing what we're seeing come to maturity now with this crime family, this country was in much, much, much better shape. We had health security. We had a lot of things that we don't have now. And they took such good advantage of us because of that. But now the chickens are coming home to roost. And I want to tell you what a Republican's doing here in Florida. I think it's absolutely outrageous. He's put forth a bill, Tom, and I want to thank you, Tom Hartman, for being such an educated person and a credible person and a person of honor and dignity and a good...
That's fine, Armin. And
okay,
enough.
Anyway. Okay. Well, I like you, Tom. I mean,
yeah, I appreciate that, Armin. We only have a minute, though, before we've got to take a break. Your guy in Florida, what's he doing?
Here's what they want to do. A Republican's put a bill forward in Florida. Listen to this. He wants to give illegal aliens not just emergency room care, but carte blanche free health care. Now, listen. Here, I'm a guy, me and my wife work and we pay taxes, we're American citizens. Aetna screwed me, so now I gotta pay $18,000 a year, I can't afford that for health insurance for my wife and me, but they're forcing me, we either pay our taxes or go to federal prison, and they wanna force me to support illegals that break in here and give them totally free health care. When did a Republican or the Democrats ever put a bill forward in Congress since 92 when Clinton tried to get health care that says, American citizens that pay taxes will have guaranteed access to affordable health care?
Yeah.
When did either party put a bill like that?
It hasn't. Well, in 1947, Armin, it was Harry Truman who submitted legislation to a Republican House and a Republican Senate for a national health care program for all, essentially Medicare for all, and the Republicans shot it down. It's been on the table since 1947. And frankly, as somebody who has used the health care systems of a variety of different countries where I've been able to just simply walk in and have the national health care pay for it, I think we should have health care for everybody who's in the United States, period. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom
for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Mike Dirks, to Alex Goldmark, Tim MacArthur, Clay Kaplis, Andrew Dunn, Lauren Kirshner. Thanks, Lauren, answering the phones there and doing a marvelous job. And Julian Sukman, who's usually running the board for us at Air America Radio. To Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org. To Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room. And Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website. To our affiliates, our sponsors. And you for listening. Special thanks to all of you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Susan in Seattle. Hey, Susan.
Hi there. I just wanted to remind, and I wish they would have done this for all of the Valerie Plame things, the excuses that they're already putting out, the Republicans, that, well, they didn't know it was a crime to be talking to all those agencies. Since when
right.
did ignorance of the law become a defense?
Well, it is if you're a Republican.
Well, but maybe we need to be getting out there and or at least to talk to the media about this item, that ignorance of the law, that they can't use that and get away
yeah.
with it. I'm just hoping.
Oh, man, it's time to share that meme. Well said, Susan. Thank you very much. Victor in Los Angeles. Hey, Victor.
Yeah, David Halberstam just died a couple days ago, and
mm-hmm.
it was a bizarre death, kind of like the Paul Wellstone death, you know.
He died in a car accident, didn't he?
Broadsided by a car and just a freak accident. I just wanted to point out what a great hero he was, a liberal hero, too. When he wrote his book, The Best and the Brightest, I think it started an avalanche, and many other people think it started the avalanche that ended the Vietnam War. He wrote other books before that, The Making of a Quagmire, American Vietnam during the Kennedy era. He was one of the ones that popularized the term quagmire.
Mm-hmm.
And he recently wrote a book on the war in the time of peace, Bush, Clinton,
yes.
and the generals in 2001.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, David Halberstam was a good man, and we have lost an important fight. Thank you, Victor, for pointing that out. Jeff in Tacoma. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know about May 1st, May Day, the International Workers' Day, but for those who don't know yep. it, this year there's going to be celebrations all over the country in favor of immigrants' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Tacoma, we have a homegrown group called America in Solidarity, and we've been putting on these celebrations every year, and this will be our fourth annual May Day Workers' Celebration. And so I just wanted to tell folks about it in case they're in the area and want to get involved.
Sure. Okay. Is there a website, Jeff, or something?
Yeah, yeah. The event will be at King's Books in Tacoma from 6:30 to 9, and they can learn all about it at www.americasolidarity.org.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Good to hear from you. Juan in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Juan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Tom, I think it's outrageous that the Posada Carina story has got no press coverage at all. And this guy.
Well, we covered it on this program.
Oh, okay. I told your screen I didn't know because I just tuned in.
Yeah, the story, for those of you who don't know or don't recall that Juan is talking about, is that there's this guy who blew an airliner out of the sky, much like Gaddafi, two guys working for Muammar Gaddafi were alleged to have done with Flight Pan Am 103, only instead of tracking them down for years and years and prosecuting the country that was hiding the terrorists who blew the airliner out of the sky like we did with Tripoli, with Libya. That guy actually was just released from jail on bond here in the United States. And Venezuela, he escaped from prison in Venezuela in 85 after being convicted of blowing this airliner out of the sky and killing 97 people, as I recall. And he's now, you know, back in Miami. So
right, and Venezuela wants him for extradition, and they said the U.S. government officially said that they won't because they fear he might be tortured. How can
right,
he be in a straight place now? That's
right. We won't extradite terrorists who blow up airliners. We pick and choose which terrorists we're going to
yeah.
deal with. Yeah,
and
it's hypocrisy.
Torture. Yeah, we're not going to send them over there because you're going to torture him. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. It's hypocrisy raised to an art form, Juan. Well said. Neil in Hammond, Louisiana. Hey, Neil.
Mr. Hartman, love your program. Thank you for your insight. My question deals with Monica Goodling. I know that she was granted immunity and when she threatened to plead the fifth, but I was wondering if there is any kind of precedent of someone who's been granted immunity but still invoking the fifth, because I'm concerned about her still trying to protect her own, as I know there.
To the best of my knowledge, there is no precedent for that. If you try to invoke the Fifth Amendment after you've been granted immunity, you are in contempt of Congress and you go to jail. You don't pass go and you don't get
okay.
go out of jail card. As far as I know, maybe somebody will correct me on this, but I'm quite positive I'm right. Kenneth in New York City. Hey, Kenneth, got a minute before we've got to wrap up the program here.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I actually sent you an email last night about a proposed closing of a reserve unit here in New York City. And if you get a chance, just take a look at it. I think it is an outrage.
Well, tell our listeners about it here if you can do it quickly.
Yeah, that we're closing military units in the U.S. while we're supporting, you know, foreign militaries and all that. And so if you get a chance.
Well, at the same time, we're building a private military in the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a number of private military contractors. Yeah.
And then we're shutting our own. And it's just an outrage. Don't we need everybody to fight this war?
Well, and we need American citizens who are in the employ of the U.S. government and who have sworn loyalty to the U.S. government rather than in the employ of private corporations who have sworn loyalty to making a profit. That's my big concern, frankly, is that the privatization of our army, the privatization of our National Guard, and the ongoing privatization of America is just a very, very, very bad thing for us. On Monday on the Tom Hartman program, I'll be challenging conservative Joseph Farah from WorldNet Daily. He says radical liberal activists have invaded and conquered America's newsrooms. Say what? And Jerome Gillette from Daily Kos is here on his socialist healthcare horror story. Never forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. It all starts with each one of us getting involved. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend.